What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Carolina Knicks Day Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Palat. This week's guest is a mentor, friend, practically my therapist, Miss Sharice Johnson. Living in the South as a black woman, we talk politics. We talk the Alabama election, the power of black girl magic, and also what it means to be an evangelical voter, if anything anymore. We talk Jerry Richardson, the Carolina Panthers, if Diddy is a viable owner, and then we shift gears. We talk LeVar Ball, not his parenting style, but some of the vision he has. We might be in different boats on this one, but this week is a good one. In this week's guest segment of the Carolina Knicks Day Podcast. How are you, Mama Reese?
I'm doing good. What's going on?
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this for a little bit, and, you know, I'm interested to get your perspective on a few things that we're going to talk about. But, you know, before we dive into those topics, can you give the listeners a little bit of your background? You know, we've known each other forever through church, but I brought you in because you have a different specialty than sports. Could you give the listeners a little bit about who you are?
Absolutely. So I'm a licensed professional counselor located in Charlotte, married, have two teenagers. Been here in Charlotte, let's see, maybe 12, 13 years, hard to keep count. Originally born in New York, grew up in Atlanta, been all over the East Coast, a little bit Midwest, and really just have a natural love for people. Love that I get to wake up every day and do what I love and really help people feel like they're living well or being their best selves in life and whatever that looks like. So glad to be on the show.
I'm excited to have you on. You know, there are a few things we're going to talk about, everything, you know, from being a parent. But the first thing I want to talk about, you know, is because I'm sure that you have seen, not a rise in business, but you've seen certain trends based off of the political climate of the last 2 years. I want to talk Doug Jones and this Alabama race, because everybody's talking about how, you know, a Democrat finally flipped Alabama, but really it was black women in the South doing the obvious thing and saving Alabama from let's call him an accused pedophile. So before we go into the numbers or anything, because 97% of black women voted against Roy Moore, I had a question for you. You know, you are a smart, black woman who lives in the South, and as we both have in common, grew up or lived in the evangelical church. You know, I got a question. As a black woman, was it surprising to see that black women did black women magic and saved Alabama? But why do you think consistently the black woman is sort of underappreciated when it comes to the Democratic Party in the South?
Yeah, you know, no, not surprising. I feel like over time, over history, we have always known, you know, there's power in what we can do together. And when we see injustice, we're usually traditionally, just as a culture, as a people, very big in stepping in and going, something has to be done. Underrepresented. I feel like we can be an anomaly sometimes. You know, everybody may not agree. I found this to be my own personal experience, especially being in the South, is that black women are often viewed as intimidating. So I don't feel like you can always put us in a box. You know, it's very unique. So I feel like Democrats, Republicans, political parties honestly kind of don't know what to do. And then if we're honest, you get into the background of just our nation, they're always going to traditionally go after the male vote. So hopefully this wakes everybody up to really realize, you know, you're overlooking something that's very powerful and can be used in a really great way in the midst of politics.
Okay, so so we've discussed that a little bit. What about being an evangelical? Because, you know, one of the things that we have seen, one of the things that you and I have lived and are living, we have a lot of friends or people that we know, acquaintances, call them whatever you want, that, you know, have hidden behind this idea of being an evangelical voter in the South. Now, you know, personally, I've felt there's a lot of hypocrisy in that. You know, there are a lot of fallbacks on that. But do you find that it has been difficult, you know, personally, not even from a voting standpoint, but from these sort of relationships around you in the South? Because, you know, I'm not down there anymore, so I can't really speak to it. But do you find there is a hypocrisy or trouble in this idea of the new age evangelical voter, especially in the last 2 years between Trump and, you know, once again, an accused pedophile in Roy Moore?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't know that I honestly even believe that the evangelical voter even still exists anymore. Like, party lines are nothing like they used to be. It used to be where if you're a Democrat, you kind of knew that it stood for these traditional things. If you're a Republican, it stood for this. And I feel like, you know, deals are being made behind closed doors and people are breaking that. I do feel like a lot of people are hiding behind that label. And it's not a good thing. I think a lot of people have used it within the last 2 years as a means of not being informed. Choosing to vote for people for one thing.
I was going to say, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you really think it's not being informed, or do you really think, because I personally call me a pessimist. You know, I tend to think people fall back on that to try to justify the way they are now voting, because there are a lot of people that I know. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to throw you in the same boat. I can't speak for you, but there are a lot of people that I know ran into the same circles as us. That's as far as I'll go. Who use the idea of being a quote unquote evangelical voter in order to say, all right, Donald Trump may be a racist, misogynistic, xenophobic bigot, but because he's a Republican and that kind of is the party of Jesus and God and all of that, I'm okay voting for him.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's both. Like, if I'm totally honest, I think you have the group of people who use it to just cover up, like, this is what I want to do and here's a safe way to do it. And then you have the idiots who follow them who don't know their research and don't know what people stand for and hear somebody who they consider an evangelical voter and what they're doing and hop on that bandwagon. But at the same time, I think political parties also, they bank on that. They bank on the fact that, let's be honest, your average voter right now, their way of finding out what's going on in politics is Instagram and Facebook. They're not doing their research. They have no clue what's going on. And so that propaganda piece is just huge. So it's both. Absolutely.
Do you find that difficult in, you know, because I mean, you and your husband, Randy, who I love to death. I mean, you two are grown adults. You know, you have kids, you have a family. Do you find that, you know, especially in the last year, raising two young black children that, you know, they've grown up in the church as well, or, you know, they've grown up in this sort of evangelical culture. Have you found it hard an explanation in raising two kids, seeing that their friends are falling back on these things, not knowing that the person that they support does not care about people who look like me or you or your kids, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely brought up a conversation that we, you know, knew was coming, but it's a completely different world for them to see. Especially my oldest will be 18 in a few weeks, so she is pumped and ready to gain her voting rights. So it's even been kind of a teaching opportunity for her to go, okay, do you know what you think you really know? Or are you going on the bandwagon of the people around you? But yeah, this recent climate within the last 1 or 2 years has their eye open in a way that no storybook could ever come alive. I was actually talking with someone on a different podcast, and we were kind of talking about this, how it's even more damaging than maybe it was 20, 30 years ago. Because if we're honest, our African-American teens and millennials aren't necessarily ready for this, you know? So you guys have grown up in this utopia of thinking, oh, you know, we're good. We can do anything we want. Everything is fine. We've overcome. And then wham, the reality of the last year or two, we can even say the reality of the last year, 6 months to a year, is showing a completely different story. So yeah, it's making my kids think and question. And then it is trying to find that balance of, okay, how do you love, but also know truth at the same time and stay woke? Cause all of that's important at the same time. You can't fall asleep and you can't put your head in the covers. You have to be informed and know that there are going to be moments in life where you're going to recognize that there are some differences there and people will remind you of those. So yeah, it's brought some tough conversations, and I'm definitely having to parent my son in particular in a completely different way. completely different.
Okay, so what about from a professional standpoint? And you know, I'm not asking you for specifics here, but sure. You know, Jim and I talk about all the time on the podcast that, you know, in this new age of sort of white neoliberalism, or sort of neoliberalism in general, you have everybody feeling like the sky is just now falling. When if you're a woman of color, if you're a part of the LGBTQ community, you know, if you're a minority in any sense, the sky has been falling in a lot of senses for a while. Have you seen any sort of, have you seen, you know, a noticeable change, not even any particular demographic of people, but since the last election for people who feel like, I didn't know the world was like this. Like, this is a lot to handle right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the day after this most recent election, I promise you, every patient I have from age 13 to 65 needed to talk about what they were experiencing in one way or the other, every single one, to the point where myself and other professionals in the area needed to also process for ourselves, like, wow, this is a lot. You know, it's all happening at the same time. And we also have a responsibility to continue to separate our own stuff and our own feelings from what people are going through. And if I'm honest, the conversation hasn't stopped, but in some ways, it's actually been pretty valuable. You know, you definitely have people who are outraged and upset, but then you also have people who have privilege that I work with that are fairly affluent, and they're ashamed. And they feel bad, and they feel like, wow, I've been sleeping myself. You know, I was having a conversation with someone, and she's another therapist. And she was like, hey, I realize now for the first time in my life that I was born on third base and I didn't know it, you know, and I love that analogy. And we had some conversation about that and going, okay, so what's your responsibility now that you have that awareness? You know, you guys want to get together and have these nasty women marches. Okay, that's wonderful. You all posted your pictures and made a mess all over the Capitol.
Yeah.
And have we heard anything from that movement?
No.
Like, what are you doing on a regular basis? And so you have to understand. So then when you talk about, LGBTQ or women of color, I look at that as lip service, and it really doesn't mean anything. You know, my bigger thing is, who's in your life? You know, does everyone in your world look like you?
Yeah.
And if they do, then that shows that we still have a problem, you know, that things haven't really changed.
No,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. You know, and again, like, you know, I mean, I grew up going into church at Central, where there were a lot of people who operated in that sense, not understanding. And this isn't a shot at Central at all. This is just, you know, us growing up in Charlotte. You know, there were a lot of people who did not see that when they looked around, they saw a lot of people that looked exactly like them. And this isn't even from a race standpoint, but, you know, socioeconomic status, all of that. So, you know, it's very interesting to see now, because I'm not in Charlotte. I'm not there. I assume that it had to have been an interesting last 16 months. Speaking of, you know, culture, different things going on in Charlotte, Jerry Richardson is selling the Carolina Panthers. I'm sure that the noise down there has been unique
so
and significant. There's talks about Diddy coming in. You know, Diddy called them the North Carolina Panthers.
Not happening.
Some people took offense to that. You don't think there's any realistic chance of Diddy, even with, you know, a power group, you know, Stephen Curry saying he would jump on board, Colin Kaepernick saying
absolutely
he would jump
not.
On. Why not?
Absolutely not. There's no way. Like, let's be real. They're not going to let the slaves become owners.
And so it's interesting you bring that up, because Jim talked about this. We're recording this on the 20th. Jim and I did a podcast on the 19th where he basically said, and Jim is a middle-aged white guy with a family.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim said the good old boys are not going to let somebody who could possibly change the system, even from a thought standpoint, joint the club. You're in the same boat.
Yeah, no way. Because as a matter of fact, I want to say today, information came out about another family that was local that they've already kind of pegged that may be potential. So at the end of the day, let's be real. There's all of these kind of back systems and unspoken messages, or in some more spoken than ever before, that are meant to keep people where they are. And, you know, they will quote unquote allow you to get so far, but as long as they also know, hey, at the end of the day, I'm still ultimately under control. You know, for example, there was information out there to say that, oh, the Panthers are this amazing organization. No knock at the Panthers, even though I'm in North Carolina. Sorry.
Take
not a
shot. A
Panthers
you,
fan.
You can take your knock.
It is what it is. So, you know, about how they are just such a master organization and an example of what diversity should look like because they have a black quarterback and a Latino coach. And again, you know, excuse the reference, it's still like placing educated house niggas in the right place to go, that's fine. This makes me look great. This is great for our image, but you're only going to get so far, you know, and nobody wants to admit that. But it's truth and it's fact and it's out there.
Okay, do you think that goes beyond the sort of ownership group? Because again, like I can just go off of my Facebook. Diddy is worth almost $1 billion. Like this is a man who has branded a culture, who runs a television network. Now, granted, I know that the Carolina Panthers are probably worth $2 to $5 billion. I get that, but this is a man who with the right backing or with the right group could come in and buy this team. Now, beyond the owners, I mean, it seems like there are a significant amount of people in Charlotte who would be totally against this as well.
Well, you know, I'll be honest. So when he made his little announcement about wanting to do it, he needed to like know what he was talking about. Like he did say a couple things that were like, "You sound stupid." So I'm gonna be real
Colin
with you
Kaepernick.
On that, Diddy.
He's gonna bring Kaepernick to compete against Cam Newton.
Yeah, right. You want it? Right, right. Bring like that. Made anybody who would have even thought about giving you possibility, you know, shut down right there to say you're going to get rid of their star quarterback. And let's be honest, any city also has kind of their culture, their patriotism. Yep. They would want somebody that they felt like, hey, this person's going to come in and they're going to protect what we value. And then let's talk about economically, you know, after 2022, the Panthers don't have to stay in Charlotte. So that's terrifying to a lot of people who are thinking far ahead or who know that information. So it's in their best interest. It's in the best interest of the city, if we're honest, to also make sure that, okay, whoever buys this portion of the team also wants to keep this team here, because what the heck are we going to do with Bank America Stadium if we don't have a professional football team here?
No, you're exactly right.
You know,
you're exactly right, but there's no chance. No chance at all for you.
Yeah. No. Not happening. Not happening.
Okay. Well, look, I am Ofer. Jim said, hell no, you are basically in the same camp, but okay.
Yeah.
It looks like Diddy is not coming to
I can't
Charlotte.
Believe I'm agreeing with Jim. You know, I don't know how many times this may ever happen because I do listen all the time, but I am agreeing with Jim. So.
All right. I want to shift gears a little bit again, because you are a black parent who are raising black children in a black family. I want to talk LeVar Ball. You know, you and I have talked a little bit, but LeVar Ball today said that he was going to start his own basketball league. He said he was going to call it the JBA, the Junior Basketball Association, and it is for college or high school players who have graduated and are looking for another route instead of going to college. Now, I don't really want to get into the economics or the sort of faults or pros and cons into that, but I see that tons of people hate LeVar Ball for whatever reason. I'm sure that you may dislike him in some capacities, but I got one question for you. I mean, can you knock the hustle? Can you hate on the fact that LeVar Ball is trying to do something different, or is it as a parent and as a personality, you don't really jive with where he's going?
Yes, I can knock the hustle.
Really?
You know what I mean? Because I don't feel like, absolutely. I feel like if you have this platform, and let me say that I think it's ridiculous that he's even been given the platform, but that's where we are as a culture. We value stupidity and we put it on a pedestal and bring it up as much time as possible. You know, I'm serious. I mean, do you know any other parent of an NBA player who's gotten as much play as he has? For just being an idiot and being rude. I mean, seriously.
In my lifetime, no.
Yeah, right. So I can knock the hustle, because if we look at the big picture of even a couple of things that we're talking about, he's perpetuating what we're saying is the problem. So you have, and I know you don't want to talk about the economics, but I'm going to bring it up anyway.
No, go ahead.
I want nationally ranked students who need money, basically, need to support their families because they're struggling, but don't want to go to college, you know, so you're still keeping them in the same kind of slave mentality of, I don't ever want you to seek for anything higher than right here. But where's the education around, okay, but what happens after you can't play anymore? Now, what do you do when you retire? You have no idea how to invest that money. You were just super excited because you got it. You have lots of great shoes and clothes, and I'm being stereotypical some. You know, I almost feel like you're recreating Allen Iverson, where you're not looking at the opportunity to go, we need to do something different, and we need to teach our African-American males to think bigger, to think broader, to think community, to think, you know, there are important things that you learn. You're a college-educated grad. Yes, there may be some great things about it. No, there are some other things that are terrible. But that's a big part of just growing up and learning how to be a man. So you're just taking boys and you're throwing dollars their way and telling them, hey, don't worry about anything. Just come make your $1,000 a year that your whole family will be after. And I'm not going to teach you anything about integrity or being a man or any of the other valuable lessons that you need to learn. So I absolutely can knock the hustle. You know, I have a son who plays basketball, and we're constantly on him about who are you outside of being that ball? Is that your only identity? And then what happens when you're no longer that person anymore? I work with people who struggle with that all the time. We see athletes that struggle with that all the time.
Yeah.
When they're not in that same level of vein, they don't know who they are. They have no purpose. They don't know what to do. And it's a downward spiral. So it's horrible.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Because I have a love-hate relationship with LeVar. I think he is... I think he's a jackass at times, but you don't think
in some way or capacity
he is showing by the model that he wants to put. Look, I am telling you guys to go for something more. Like I, as a man, or you know, I as a black man who is raising three children or three kids who could be elite athletes, two of them who definitely are the you know, the middle child Jello will have to see. But you don't think he's saying you don't have to go the route that everyone else is going. Like, make something of your own. It is possible. Like, I'm going to do this because I'll argue the fact that if half of these elite athletes are going to UCLA or wherever for only 6 months, how much of an education are they getting? They're not getting any money from the NCAA. And I'll question the fact that the NCAA, Mark Emmert, who runs the NCAA, doesn't care about these players at all in any capacity. Now, whether LeVar's trying to make a dollar or not.
Does LeVar care about these players? So let's be real. If he didn't have three star athletes, you know, one of which was an idiot and got caught stealing and now can't get in anywhere, would he be doing this?
It's the chicken or the egg because he wouldn't have the platform. He wouldn't have the platform to do what he's doing. So I think in some way it goes both ways. I just think that I respect the idea of trying to break the system, especially when the system is already broken from an NCAA level. I get the education standpoint.
But I think he's creating another broke system. And if I'm honest, I think he's no different than the NCAA in some regards. It's still to his benefit. It's absolutely still to his benefit. It's absolutely still going to be his way. You're still exchanging one system for another. A way to break a system is you teach people how to create their own. And that's not what he's doing.
You don't think even if players are paid in a proper manner, because again, like the economics behind this are going to take a lot. But let's go into the fantasy land here. He said he wants to pay players between $3,000 and $10,000 per month in an 80-player league. What, that's $8 million that it's going to take just to pay the players, all that sort of thing. But you don't think that's a better system for potentially one and done players to make up to $10,000 a month? And then go to the NBA where they can make even more money? Like, you don't think that's a better system than going to the NCAA for 6 months?
Because I'm a former educator, you're not going to knock me down off of they need their education. You just won't. I just think I don't even agree with the fact that they can play a year and leave. That's just me. I know we could probably debate that, you know, a million times over. I just think when you talk about a lot of nationally ranked players, we have to look, and this is the therapist side of me too. We're not looking at the development that's needed there, not just as, hey, you get to make a lot of money. We're talking about young, impressionable boys who still don't know how to be men, and that's the missing link. That's why you still have players who get up and have tons of money and still have issues and are still beating the crap out of their wives or on drugs. Because character is missing. It can't always be about let's find the best way for you to be economically stable, because that's not enough anymore.
Yeah, no, you know, I definitely agree with that in a large capacity. I just feel like within the system, like, if I cannot put food on the table, or if my main objective from being a sport or being a athlete is specializing my skill and it's to put food on the table, if I think I can do it in a better way than the NCAA, it seems like in the system currently, the idea of this could be something bigger. To me, the bigger conversation, in my opinion, is outside of LeVar Ball. This system in the NCAA is a failing one, in my opinion, anyways, but Nike could, Nike has the money to do this. Like, a company like Nike or Adidas has the capacity to do this in a manner where they could pay players. They could mold them not only from a basketball standpoint, but from, you know, a minimal sort of education system. But this can be done, in my opinion. So I feel like where I do agree with LeVar in a small sense is the NCAA is a broken system, and if somebody thinks, or at least can create the idea, because I think this is the larger sort of thing for LeVar, and maybe I'm giving him too much credit. I think this creates a conversation in the sense of looking at the NCAA for what it is, which is a broken system.
Now, I agree with that, and I do agree the system is broken, and that it's intriguing to look at it, but I'm not buying into the fact that LeVar Ball on his own is now the answer. Like, yeah, no, not convinced.
No, I mean, this very much feels like, you know, your second or third uncle that has like this really good hustle, like this really good blueprint, but doesn't have the funds for it, is going to drive it into the ground. You know, 10 months in, the checks are going to start bouncing back. Then everybody is screwed. You know?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do think that he can do it. I think he will find a lot of young players who are like, absolutely, because I need to get my family out of where I am. Like, I can see that. I think even people who don't like LeVar Ball, some of them, if they think it is going to be financially lucrative for them, may even buy into what he's doing, because at the end of the day, you know, unfortunately, money is still a huge culprit in a lot of our motivation. But I just think that the boys in the end still run the risk of being let down. You know, I just do. Again, what happens when they get injured? If they get injured, then what? So then they've got themselves in a lifestyle that's $3,000 to $10,000 a month, and all they can do now with a high school degree is go work at McDonald's.
It sounds like you're not going to let RJ play for Big Baller Brand Basketball League. That's what it sounds
you
like.
You best believe that is not. Oh my goodness. Oh, don't even say that. No, absolutely not.
Okay. Well,
I never thought I would disown my child, but that would be pretty close there.
So I'm not going to see RJ in any Big Baller Brand apparel playing in the league.
No.
Okay. I respect that. I respect that. Reese, this is exactly why I wanted to have you on. Only because, you know, I'm not a mother or a father. I am a child in myself. So, you know, the perspective is a bit different. But no, I'm glad I had you on. You know, I hope that we can do this again, talking some more subjects. And I know that the listeners, you know, I'm happy that they were able to get another perspective. So what do you say? I say we should do this again at some point.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
I'm glad to have you on. I hope the listeners enjoyed it. And I'll be back next week with Jim with another guest in the next few weeks. I'm not going to hint at it because I need to secure the bag first. But for this week, I hope you guys enjoyed the guest. I'm Aaron Palat. She's Cerise Johnson. And this is the Carolina Knicks Day Podcast.